Welcome to the Aligned Musician Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kimberly Hankins, and I'm a violist as well as a yoga and breathwork facilitator. I created this podcast to empower musicians like you to find your own path towards healing and normalize conversations around musicians' wellness. I'm so grateful for your support and thank you for joining me. Classical new music specialist and voice teacher, Shauna Fallahy, loves all things teaching. Shauna has had the pleasure of serving on numerous San Francisco Bay Area college and high school voice faculties, leading workshops, and maintaining a private voice studio. Her own wellness journey led her to become an instructor and teacher trainer of the Daily Method, which is an aligned-focused bar and indoor cycling, as well as a two-time marathoner. In addition to her master's in music and vocal pedagogy, Shauna holds certifications in yoga. She's an RYT 500, myofascial release. She's a certified role model method practitioner and meditation studies in the Theravada tradition. She has synthesized these modalities with traditional voice teaching into her own program, Embodied Singer, available in the form of Embodied Online, which features over 100 videos of voice instruction, movement, myofascial release, meditation, and breath practices. So I'm so excited to have you here, Shauna. Thank Yay. You so much for being here.
It's my pleasure. And it always feels good to like hear all the stuff read out in a list. You're like, oh yeah, I really have worked really hard and done a lot of stuff.
You've done so much. And yeah. I think I found you here on Instagram.
Yeah, totally. Know,
within this last year, maybe 2 years ago. Yeah. And I was just so inspired by your content. I feel like we have a lot in common, except you're a singer. You're yeah. coming at these movements and meditation practices from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And I just love what you're doing for musicians and all of this work that you're doing. So thank you for being here.
It is totally mutual. I'm always inspired and intrigued and motivated by everything that you're learning and everything that you're sharing with your work. We're kindred spirits. I totally appreciate you.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. So I always love to start off these podcasts by just allowing you some space to share your wellness journey. And so what inspired you to start helping musicians? What was your wellness journey like? And feel free to take as much time as you need to share that story.
Totally. So I was like very much the choir is my sport kid. So I was raised in a family where our annual vacations were to like go to New York and see a show every night and spend all day in museums. We were like not hiking or, you know, biking family. So I was someone who's really connected to the arts from a really, really young age and not connected to my body at all. So I had a lot of challenges as an adolescent. I had a lot of challenges in college related to my feelings in my body, about my body, how I was presenting myself on stage. It was really challenging. So I moved, I went to NEC. So I was living on the East Coast, and then I moved back to California, and I decided it was just really time to make a significant lifestyle change. And I had never like done any kind of movement practice or like anything. And I'm very, very sensitive to feeling ashamed or feeling incompetent. So it's difficult. It was difficult for me to start something new, especially that made me really confront the way that I had treated my body and lived in my body for the first like 25 years of my life. So I found the Daily Method, which you mentioned in my bio, which is an alignment focused bar program with a real great emphasis on community and self-respect and dignity in the body. And I went and I did this class and it was so difficult. And there was a mirror. I'm like red faced. And after the class, I went and I said goodbye to the teacher, sat in my car and wept. I just like bawled my eyes out. But I went back the next day, which was very unusual for me. Something that would be that difficult, I would typically shy away from or not do again, but something compelled me to go back. And that was really the beginning of it for me. And I found a sense of strength, a sense of competence, and a pride in my body that I, and sensation, physical sensation that I had like never felt. So that was really the beginning of it. And at the same time, I did the couch to 5K, like running intervals that ended up leading to me doing distance running. Like you mentioned, I ran a couple of marathons and I became a Daily Method teacher. So at the time that I started teaching Daily Method, I was getting my master's in vocal pedagogy, and it was a perfect intersection of me learning in a very specific way about the vocal mechanism and respiration, breathing and stuff, but also learning holistically about the entire body, biomechanics, alignment, different things like that, which really informed the way I was working with voice students at that time. And so kind of that was the beginning of it. And then because the Daily Method is inclusive of yoga and Pilates and other modalities, I ended up following all those different roads and just learning more and more and observing what an incredible difference these things were making in my own singing and in my work with fellow singers and colleagues that I was sharing these practices with. And it was clear that this sense of embodiment and this holistic approach to vocal pedagogy was felt like what I was meant to pursue and keep learning about. So that's it as quickly as I can say it.
So inspiring. And I'm actually not familiar with the Daily Method. So now I really want to go look into it and research it a little bit more.
Yeah, if you know the Barr Method or Barr 3 are very similar. So Barr Method, they're all kind of offshoots of what was called the Lottie Burke Method. And she was a dancer in New York that created a program that was a combination of like orthopedic exercises, Pilates, yoga kind of movements and positions oriented at the ballet bar. So Daily Method is one of those types of programs, but is specifically interested in alignment. So the principles of the Daily Method are align, engage, move. And that really served as a great foundation for me in my body education. And now I've learned a lot more. And now there are all kinds of different things that I bring into my Daily Method teaching. But yeah, that was the foundation of it for me. And if you ever want to take a class, I would love to just let me know. We'll get you in.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, they're all online right now. So we're actually just starting. It's just testing the waters of going back into the studio with only a few people in the room. But a lot of us, including myself, are now fully vaccinated. So I'm in California. So we're just starting to dip our toes into going back and being with our people again. I haven't been in yet, but I'll be teaching live. I've been teaching from home, but I'll be teaching in the studio starting at the end of April. So I'm like so nervous and excited. It's weird. I haven't like done it in a year. And so anyway.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
So exciting.
I'd love to have you daily.
I would love to. Okay. So for our listeners that may not be familiar with the concept of embodiment, how would you define that, and why is this something important for musicians?
Oh, wow. That's such a great, huge question. I'm sure that I won't give like the most maybe complete or accurate definition, but off the top of my head, I would say exploring embodiment is exploring the felt sense of being in your body. And the way I would take it a step further as the way that felt sense is then expressed outward. You know, so because our sense of embodiment informs our communication. So it's not just, you know, interoception, feeling what's going on inside the body, but it's also the way that we live in community, the way that we live outwardly in from that bodied perspective. I guess that's what I would say. And for singers, I think the application is clear, right? Because the body is the instrument. And so our sense and our relationship to the body that we live in, we are living in our musical instrument. And so in my experience with my own singing and singers that I have the honor of working with, the voice, the sound of the voice is the sound manifestation of the body that created it. The mind, the emotional intellect, the instinct, all of that, right, is represented in the sound. And you can tell, like, if a singer comes in and they're, you know, they're running late, and so they're really upregulated and they're, you know, nervous that they're going to make you upset that they were late, you hear that in the sound, you know. So it's, yeah, the exploration of embodiment for anyone, I think, is a really important part of self-actualization, really knowing who I am and how I show up in my life. And as a singer, it takes it even a step further, I think. Mm. I'm seeing little hearts, yay. Hearts out to the Instagram people. I can't see, I guess, because I'm like the guest, I can't easily see who's on here. Oh, Jenna's here. Jenna teaches the Daily Method. Hi, Jenna. I missed you. Okay. Hi, everybody who's here.
And by the way, thank you for being here, everyone who's here. If you have any questions, please drop them into the chat. We might get to them during this episode or maybe at the end, depending on what the question is. So
just... We both love questions.
Yes. I thrive off of questions.
Totally. Questions help us teach. Ask us questions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love your definition of embodiment and how you touched on how singers, your instrument is your body.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I'm not so familiar with this, being an instrumentalist, and I have sang in the past, but I've never had voice lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So do you find that singers in their approach to performing have a different experience than maybe instrumentalists do in terms
I would imagine so. I mean, I play some instruments, but I wouldn't consider myself an instrumentalist in terms of having years and years of training or performing as an instrumentalist. So I can't totally speak to that. But yeah, I mean, we were talking before. Do you want to share about the feeling of having the viola present?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We were just before this, I was talking about how, you know, in lessons, how it can feel like there's a barrier between me and the music I'm making, right? Because if my instrument is having a bad day, or like I break a string, or my instrument just doesn't want to stay in tune because of the climate, it's like, oh, this is my instrument. This isn't me. I don't have to feel bad about myself. There's no sense of self-judgment. And that in some ways is liberating and freeing, because it's like, oh, it's not me. It's just this is what I'm dealing with today.
Yeah.
And it can also be frustrating too, right? Because it's like, oh, I have to go to somebody else to repair my instrument in order to sound better.
But you got to buy it. You got to pick it out and choose it. So there's that. Yeah. So that, when you said that, I thought that was really interesting. And actually, in case I forget to make this connection, if we talk about meditation, for me, one of the greatest values in my meditation practice, and why I really advocate that all people find some way into a meditative or contemplative practice, but definitely singers, is that it creates a sense of space and buffer between myself and stimulation. So there's maybe a viola's width of space for me emotionally and mentally, created through those practices. Because I think for a singer, it is you. The sound that you make is not just you. It's the deepest, most innate version of you. And so you really are being very vulnerable in expressing everything that's going on in your body, heart, mind, through your sound, whether or not you seem particularly connected to the text that you're singing. Because you can give like a performance that's not particularly emotionally connected, but you are still expressing all of yourself in that moment, right? And so there is, it's very naked. In fact, so many singers, classical singers who perform opera, often are much, much more comfortable in operatic roles than they are doing art song literature or oratorio, because they feel a little bit protected by being in costume, being in makeup, being a character, and being able to be a little bit hidden in that regard. Whereas if you are on stage and you're interpreting a poem and you're singing it, just you and a piano, it's about as, or if you're a songwriter singing your own music that you've written, I mean, it's about as naked as it gets, I think, as far as performance. So I would guess that that's a little bit different, but I think there are probably instrumentalists who are very, very attuned and sensitive to how vulnerable they feel in performance. And I'm sure there are singers who don't experience that. So it really varies by personality type and experience too. But I think there's, on the deepest level, there's no way of avoiding the fact that singing is very, very innately expressive and personal.
Mm.
Your voice is like your face. It's just right out there, you know? Right.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I never considered that before either, that different singers who have different specialties in repertoire could feel different ways. Consider all singers the same, right?
It's different. And I mean, and it feels different to, like, for me, if I'm performing oratorio, say I'm like the soloist in a, you know, in Bach B minor mass or something, and I'm holding a score, that is much more comfortable to me than if I'm performing an art song memorized and I'm just standing there and there's literally nothing in between me and everybody who is receiving the music. That even just the presence of holding a score in a folder feels really different. Many people, like, you'll see them holding the edge. We usually stand in the crook of the piano if we're performing with piano, and you'll usually see the singer with their hand on the piano. And often that's just a grounding way of, like, I'm connected to something. I'm not completely out here alone. And I don't know that they even always realize that maybe that they're grounding themselves in that way. And I think it's wonderful to do that. It's just, it's interesting to notice how we respond to the circumstances that we're in when we're making music.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Can I answer this question really quickly, just because I can give a quick answer? So it's, what do you think of using vocal tubes to warm up the voice? So I'm assuming that person is referring to, like, tubes or straws. Straw phonation. Do you want to give me, like, a little heart or something if that's what you mean? Because the tubes are basically like straws that are wider. Those are examples of SOVT, semi-occluded vocal tract exercises, where part of the mouth and throat is closed off or elongated, and they are fabulous exercises. Highly recommend them. If it's working for you, awesome. If it doesn't work for you, it's not for everybody, but you might work with a teacher who can help you refine the way that you're doing it. But big fan of semi-occluded exercises. So just wanted to answer that, because we probably weren't going to get too nitty gritty into vocal technique. So.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, so I know that you also work a lot with singers and you have your own experience as a singer, and, why are movement and myofascial release, and maybe these are two completely different questions that I'm
asking. They're very overlapped. Yeah.
But what do you feel are the benefits for singers with movement and myofascial release?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's the question of embodiment. You know, these are two different big umbrella categories. Movement, a much bigger umbrella, but myofascial release, which I'll describe in a second, is more specific. They're ways of experiencing life in your body, right? So experiencing new sensations through movement, through touch. Myofascial release is self-massage, can be done with hands, therapy balls, foam rollers, different types of towels, things like that. So these different modalities help us as singers feel our body, or anybody, inhabit the body. And when we have new sensations, we have more information with which to refine the way that we express ourselves with our bodies and with our voices, if we're singers. Myofascial release and movement have in common that they can create a sense of spaciousness potentially in the body that can be helpful for singing, can be helpful for breathing for anybody, but, you know, definitely instrumentalists, wind players, brass players, but anyone. I imagine as a string player, have you noticed that breath and the breath work that you've learned and taught influences your playing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've done some myofascial release too, and I found that It's just, you know, the more you learn about the body and the mind, it's like the more you realize you don't know.
It's this
continuous learning process.
Yes, there's that whole tip of the iceberg thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, with myofascial release, it's interesting because I had an experience where I was working with myofascial release, like on my feet and on my lower body.
Yeah.
And then I was practicing later that day and I'm like, why is this easier?
Yeah. Why do you think it was? I'll offer some possibilities. Why do you think that it was?
Oh, because our bodies are connected, and there's the fascia that is in the lower half of our body is very much connected to the upper half of the body.
Yeah.
We are a whole body. And when we're working out with any part of the whole, it affects the whole body.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's all interconnected. So fascia, for people who don't know what fascia is, fascia is basically the connective tissue or the scaffolding of your entire body. So every single muscle fiber in your body, every organ, every bone, everything in your body is encapsulated in this connective tissue, which is stretchy and strong. So it has collagen and it has elastin. So it is a really kind of strong, durable, but elastic substance. And basically, if we took away your muscles and your organs and your hair and your face and all the stuff that makes you look like you, we would still see your form with your fascia intact, because that's basically what interconnects everything. So this has implications for sensation that we feel. And like you're describing, rolling out the feet can have a global influence on the sense of freedom, vitality, awareness that we feel in the entire body. So with myofascial release, we can work locally or we can work in other parts and find that it has kind of a global influence. And I do both a lot, but that is, you know, myofascial release and movement too are entry points into embodiment. And there's something for everybody and not everything is for everybody, you know? And so these, what's wonderful is there's so many different practices that we can try and experiment with to find our way in to kind of more intimacy, more connection and awareness of the body that we're living in. And the mind and the heart that are moving that body, because our emotional life is all stored in the body as well. You know, it is all interconnected.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's so interesting because I feel like every single wellness practice is trying to get at the same thing. Just like you said, yeah, with embodiment, that's like, it's really like there's many different perspectives and we're all trying to get to this place of feeling embodied, really. Yeah. That's what it's all about. And
being
not
present, like, being connected.
Yeah. And yeah, not feeling like there's a barrier between what you innately want for your life and what and how that's being expressed too.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are things, you know, that was such a poignant statement, and it is important to remember that all of these practices, especially the ones that are billed as being like calming or relaxing or down regulating to the nervous system, yes, they might have the potential to do that, but really all these practices are about bringing us into the reality of who we are in this moment, in the present moment, and it's not always a comfortable place to be. So part of exploring these practices is having a lot of kindness and compassion and a recognition that stuff is going to come up. And sometimes it's skillful and kind to be with difficult things that come up through movement or myofascial meditation, singing, playing, whatever it is, you know, and sometimes it's kinder to take a break or find another entry point for a while, because, you know, life is long. There's a lot of time to unpack all of this stuff and explore all of these practices. And we don't have to be too overwhelmed by what's coming up, you know, all at once.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I want to get back onto something that you touched on earlier,
yeah,
which was, in performance spaces as a singer, you know, you have to deal with whatever your body is doing in the given moment, and you can be in a certain state of nervous system regulation and you just have to kind of roll with it. And could you speak a little bit more on that?
Yeah. Right. I mean, so if we think about like what typically happens when the nervous system is upregulated, when we are in, as people know it, as fight or flight, sometimes freeze, but typically fight or flight, where the body is preparing for action and response, right? And it's preparing to run away from a lion or to like throw a rattlesnake. It doesn't know the difference. It doesn't realize that you're just in a room with your voice teacher and her colleagues and you're going to sing three songs and they're going to write some comments about it. You know what I mean? It don't know, right? The difference between the Serengeti and a jury, you know, or an audition and, you know, being in some really, really actually dangerous circumstances. So what typically happens to the body, there are many different responses, but they can include a profound muscular contraction of armoring, particularly around the vital organs, right? So around the heart and lungs, around the abdominal viscera. These are areas of the body that for singing or wind playing or being a human being need to be elastic and expansive. So you will likely have physical manifestations that are counter to what you need your body to do to be a musical instrument. Mm. Also, the abdomen, the diaphragm, the deep breathing muscle, and the larynx, the voice box, we don't really call it that, but many people do, are linked as part of that fight or flight response. So we're, you know, you get out on stage and all of a sudden your breathing and your literal vocal mechanism just kind of lock up. So it's, if you know that this is a reality, that this is a possibility, and if you are performing a lot and practicing a lot and auditioning a lot, so you're less inclined to feel under duress, then you can start to work with this. But it is really challenging. Other things like your mouth dries up, you have no access to your memory. Like, these are things that can happen. They don't always happen. And many people, and I have to remember this because I am not in this category, many people get into a performing circumstance and that energy enlivens the voice and really brings them into a focused, present state. And they really thrive in those circumstances. And to those people, I'm so happy for you. That's great. I am not in that category. So it really has taken me a long time to figure out, like, okay, this is what happens to my body in these circumstances. And I'm going to, first of all, be realistic. Like, yes, this is happening. I'm not going to pretend it's not, but I'm also not going to panic because I know that feelings and body sensations shift constantly. And if I let myself be in the present moment, the next present moment might not be this way. And I also know, like, if my abdomen is gripping, I can tell it to stretch. I still do have command over the movements of my body. I just have to be present enough with what's happening to make those choices. So you wound me up on something that obviously, like, gets me very animated. But yeah, it's not easy. And for some people, it's really easy. And they feel very at ease and comfortable in those circumstances. And again, that's fabulous. But there are many of us who don't. And I think really feel a lot, maybe a lot of shame or frustration about these very natural responses.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. I love how you brought up armoring, you know, because that is a very real response when we're activated in the sympathetic nervous system.
Yep.
So is shaking, you know,
because
adrenaline's rushing through our veins.
Yeah.
And then also another very common thing is like clenching in the hands.
Oh yeah.
Clenching that affects the hands. And I think, you know, that's a big one too,
because that affects
all instruments and singers too, I'm sure, with feeling like, you have so much energy or that you're tight in your hands, and that tightness often has a way of kind of spreading
Throughout
the body if we don't find a way to just kind of soften through that.
Or discharge it. You know, that's the other thing, is I think there's a lot of emphasis in a lot of practices that bill themselves as down regulating, which they can be, you know, breath practices, meditation, movement types of practices, even myofascial release, which ironically cannot always be physically comfortable, but can be down regulating at the same time. That down regulation is not the only way of shifting energy. Right. And so there, you know, many people kind of just experience this flood of excitement and adrenaline and maybe nerves, whatever you want to call it. And then it dissipates, right? It discharges as soon as we're actually doing something with that energy. So I wonder if for you, when you start to play, do the hands then start to loosen up and do what they're used to doing in your playing?
Well, I know for me, when I was really struggling with these symptoms, which you could all classify as performance anxiety.
Sure.
And I think I did classify that, but I love how you never even use that term in your description of upregulation in the nervous system, because when you think about it, they really are just symptoms, and there's things that we can do to try to downregulate, to try to overcome them, rather than diagnosing and meeting it with maybe a sense of fear.
Yeah. And pathologizing it as though it's not what we don't want those systems to go away. That's what that, you know, if you walk into the street and a bicyclist comes right in front of you, that's what gets you out of the way. Like, we want these systems to exist. We just want to help ourselves manage them when they come up at a time where it's not necessary.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And at the height of my struggle with those symptoms, I absolutely had like a shaky bow, which was
Yeah.
from having just clenching in the hands. I felt very tight through my chest, through my heart space, through my jaw.
Oh,
I had a lot of
yeah.
jaw clenching.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're feeling all of that armoring and sympathetic nervous system arousal, it's like it's so hard to break out of.
Yeah.
And I know I've talked a lot about my own journey with this and working through it.
Yeah.
But something that I found really helped me was when I learned about some of these down regulation techniques, and some very basic techniques that my teacher at the time shared with me of like things that I can do physically with the bow to stop it from bouncing, even if my
Oh,
hands are
nice.
clenching,
Yeah.
so that I felt a little more empowered. So I was like, okay, I know this might happen,
Yeah.
but I have a strategy in play. So I'm going to do these things if I feel this way. And I just kept telling myself, like, this mantra, what is coming is going. Like, whatever I'm
Yeah.
feeling, I'm just going to let up and out. And I was able to move through it. And I
I
think
love
over
that.
time, and, as I got older and I got more comfortable in those situations, realizing that like on a somatic level, my body felt more safe going into those performance situations because it's like, hey, this might happen, but it's like
Yeah.
we can't control everything and sort of releasing that sense of control, but also having
Yeah.
tools to face whatever comes up, I found very, very helpful.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, having a plan, having something to do, and having practiced that plan many times is it really empowering. I think if I could go back and do things differently at different stages of my career. I'm holding my phone now because my tripod is gonna like eject the phone. Let's see if I can get it to
Oh
stay put. You're gonna see my ceiling just for like 5 seconds, but I'll keep talking. So this has been happening to me as I teach too. If I could, be magically transported back to my early 20s, which I would not want. No, thank you, please. But if I was, I would have, like I was saying, when I first went to the Daily Method and I had a very, very difficult experience, but I went back. I wish that at that time I had done a lot of auditioning and sung in front of people a lot to just have it not feel like such an event. So that I wouldn't have such a profound nervous system response because I didn't. And so then I basically still got hired for stuff a lot and I had a lot of performances, but I didn't, I hadn't done enough that I was really working through or practicing that plan of what I was going to do. I would remember I was doing the Fauré Requiem and the soprano solo in the Fauré Requiem is basically you're sort of supposed to sound like a little boy, and I very much do not sound like a little boy, but it requires like people when people love this piece or they love that it has like this very pure kind of tone, and my voice is like a fuller, more colorful, more lyric type voice, so I shouldn't have been singing that piece in the first place, but I was, and I would get I mean, it felt like I was on a tightrope, just so completely naked and afraid. And so I used to do push-ups in the practice room to get my body like elevated, get my heart rate elevated, and I would intentionally clench my abdomen and practice singing it that way because I was like, this is probably what's going to happen to me on stage. So I was trying to replicate those circumstances. And I think it helped to a degree, but I don't know if it was like the kindest and most compassionate way to like work with that. But so much of this is trial and error and figuring out like what can I do to show up as the self that I want to be,
There's something to that
Yeah.
though, because you just triggered a memory for me of me running up and down this flight of stairs and then
Right.
running back into the practice room and trying to play that really hard passage with
I
my heart
mean,
beating like crazy. And yeah,
yeah.
there's something, I think there's something to that.
There is. I mean, I think we don't want to like create too much this inevitability that performing is going to be difficult. But we also want to be real and recognize that for some people, it is difficult, right? And things will happen in your body, AKA if a singer, your musical instrument, that never, ever happen. So as much as you want to practice and be prepared, you can't practice what has never happened before. You know, you can't practice that all of a sudden you feel so incredibly dry that it feels like you can't phonate. Like, those are circumstances that only come up when they do. But I have with certain singers who really struggle with a very, very tight body and inaccessible breath. First of all, we'll do things like movement and myofascial release to get them more slide and glide in their ribs, in their abdomen, their pelvic floor, back muscles, so that the body is more receptive to the breath in general. But then we will practice like having it be really, really, really tight and trying to sing and letting it go little by little and being okay. You know, and then continuing on with the piece once that is more comfortable, because that might happen. And we want to know what that feels like. Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I think you're right too, that there's more gentle ways that we can go about it in general.
Yes.
You know, and I think as musicians, we often have this mindset that that working harder means better results. And it can take a long time to kind of undo that mentality as well. And so with mindfulness and with embodiment, what about musicians that might feel like being in their body does not feel safe during the performance? How do we move through that and make it more of a pleasant experience?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And it's really important. People who have and have not experience trauma may not feel safe or comfortable with the sensations of their body. And the upregulating sensations for some people are triggering, and for some people are comforting, because they make the body feel strong or active or ready, you know, and able to respond to circumstances. So that the question's really important. And I think having people in your life, in your team that you trust, you know, your primary teacher if you're a musician, but also teachers in movement modalities that do feel safe for the most part, not maybe not always, but most of the time, having people that you can talk to about that, maybe not in complete detail. You don't have to disclose anything that you don't want to disclose, but, you know, asking about alternatives, different ways to connect to yourself that maybe don't connect to you in a particular way. Like, say, you know, it feels uncomfortable or inappropriate to relate to your abdomen. Like, you don't like the feeling of being aware of the breath or the breath moving in the abdomen. You don't want to touch your abdomen. You know, cool. So, you know, can we go to the ribs? Can we go to the upper back? Can we go to the nostrils? You know, is there a place that we can go for maybe just a little bit to start to experience sensation that might be useful in your music making or useful in your life, or maybe not? Maybe it's not, maybe it is the right time to be in the intellect, and later is the time to kind of enter into more physical embodied sensations.
Oh my gosh, I love that answer so much.
But I think it's about having support. You know, it's about having support and kindness and compassion to yourself, and acknowledging that, like, if something is not working for you, you have wisdom, you have agency, and there are, like I said before, life is long. There's plenty of time to explore things when it does feel appropriate and safe and kind and skillful, and it doesn't have to be today. Yeah.
That's such great advice.
And also, it's hard. You know, anyone, if they're really letting themselves experience what's coming up in the present moment, is probably going to come up against things that are challenging, you know, ideas, memories, desires, shame, pain, you know, like, we all have all this full spectrum of emotion, and it is often animated by movements or by touch sensation. So it's part of being a human being, learning about themselves. But it's also really important to be kind and take breaks and do what feels right. Oh, I think.
Absolutely. And
yeah,
it's like, I don't even know. Sometimes I wonder why we call it musician's wellness, because it's really like,
Being a person,
just being a human being. It's learning how to take care of ourselves, because ourselves, we are our instruments, even if we have a secondary instrument that we end up using to.
Well, yes. I mean, your body is your instrument too. Even though your body, I mean, I was going to say, even though it's not the resonator, but it is the resonator and it is the power source. You know, it is, you are touching wood and string, you know, you're touching these other elements, but you, all of you, heart, body, mind, memory from, you know, birth to now is playing that instrument. And I think it probably does, in the same way it feels maybe safer for some people inside a costume, or feel safer with the buffer of the instrument, you know, that's a way of stepping away from that reality. And it's okay to step away from that reality, but it's still the reality that, like, your whole self is the music. And that's why we love music. That's what's so compelling about it. And that's why it's like the ultimate act of bravery, I think, to be an expressive artist, to put it out there. Mm. Yeah.
Shauna, you're amazing. I'm so glad you're here
this
talking
is sweet.
To me.
Yeah, I mean, this is the stuff I think about all day, every day. And I still, you know, I know that my teaching, and I know that all of the different modalities that I've integrated are all trying to help people feel something that I still struggle to feel, which is a sense of comfort and ease and wholeness and dignity when I open my mouth to sing. And I still, you know, I listen to recordings, I'll practice and I'll record it and I'll listen back. So for a singer, like, it's helpful, I think, to be able to record so that you can sing out and not be thinking so much at the same time and then reflect later. And I listen to it and immediately I'm like, oh my gosh, no, delete, I can't. You know, I still have those reactions to my own voice all the time. And so when I work with other people, it's trying to help them feel a sense of empowerment and self-respect and awe, amazement at their capacity, at the innate beauty of their singing that I still am working every day to experience about my own.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
It's easy for other people.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the same way. Yeah. You know, it's like I teach and I provide all of this knowledge on how to feel more embodied, and I try to help others feel more embodied, but it's definitely a struggle for myself too sometimes. Yeah. And I'm not sure that there's a place where it ever becomes perfect, quote unquote, where we're embodied 100% of the time or aware. We're living modern lives and we're not on some hilltop meditating for 12 hours a day.
No, we're having this conversation right now into rectangles. Like, you know, our whole culture, everything is designed to sort of compartmentalize everything and to remove us from the presence of our experience. So yeah, it's, you know, I will say that that it's easier for me. It's a lot easier for me to feel proud of and connected to and patient with my body and my movement practices and my meditation than it is with my singing. And it's not surprising to me, but I really, in terms of my own self-growth and journey, I would say that I feel like my singing is the final frontier. When I get to the place where I open my mouth and I just really truly feel happy that I'm expressing myself authentically and I don't feel perfectionistic or judgmental, that will demonstrate huge personal growth for me. But the fact that I have gotten to that place with my body is a shock. You know, I never thought that would have happened. And now I really do live in my body in a way that is really different than it was in the past. And so I have this deep optimism that I still can do it with my voice too. And I'll say one more time, like, life is long. And I'm going to keep showing up for myself and trying to grow in that way, the same way that I see the incredible singers I work with of all levels, all experience levels, all genres, showing up for themselves. And it's really inspiring. And I'm like, I could stand to do a little bit more of that too.
It's so beautiful. And I'm so inspired by your own journey and how you've found the sense of embodiment in whatever ways that you've been able to. And it's, you're so right. We have so much time. There's no rush.
Yeah.
There's
no rush. I work with singers who are in their 80s and 90s, you know, and these are singers who are singing the Verdi Requiem and singing the B minor Mass and writing their own music and stuff. And they are singing for their entire lives. Like it's, you know, the hope partly with the movement practices is that we will find a way to be attuned to our body that we can move functionally and comfortably as long as we live, right? So that we can hopefully continue making music too, as long as we want to.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And something that came to mind just as a random question. I know that when musicians who are instrumentalists reach out to me and they're like, telling me about how they're experiencing tension or pain mm-hmm. while they're playing, and they ask for advice. First yeah. of all, if they're in pain, I always advise them to seek out medical care
totally.
If that's available to them. But I also really encourage that musicians videotape themselves, record themselves from different angles, watch what mm-hmm. they're doing, and you know, even watch back with the sound turned off. You don't have to yeah. listen to yourself, but just see what you're doing.
Yeah.
But with singing, everything is so internal. And so I'm just wondering, is there anything that you would recommend to fellow singers that may be struggling with tension or pain while they're singing? To just kind of mm-hmm. check in with themselves and maybe start to bring that awareness if they're not already aware of themselves.
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I do think recording and videoing is incredibly valuable. I think it's very difficult for many people, regardless of the instrument that they play, with singing, because again, your voice is your body. I imagine that for many, there might be an even deeper level of difficulty of, and I have, when I have people record themselves or video themselves practicing, or when I recommend it, I would never ever require anything, but I do encourage them to titrate that, like, you know, a little bit, go in, come out, and to do that with a very specific purpose. Like if you are interested in singing more legato, singing more smoothly and connectedly, record a very short snippet of yourself practicing focused on legato. And when you listen for the legato and try to just listen for that. So you're coming into it with a purpose. Like if you were going to video to look at your alignment when you were playing, because you were interested in, you know, what your shoulder was doing of your bow arm or something, like look at, like with laser focus, look at that part. If you're having difficulty with taking in the whole experience, you know, you can try to compartmentalize it a little bit. For singers who are experiencing tension or discomfort when they're singing, which is ubiquitous, like that's even the most trained singer experiences that because the instrument is the body. First of all, I would say, of course, like if they're having pain, to consult with whoever is on their team. So it could be a voice teacher, could be a speech pathologist if they've been, you know, if they're rehabilitating their voice after injury or surgery or something, or their primary care doctor, although they should go to a specialist, like go to an ENT, an ear, nose, and throat doctor who really can scope them, look at the folds, see what's going on, if they think there's pathology. But in general, if I were to give kind of generalized advice, there's two things I would say. One, my perspective on singing is that it's a balance of space and energy, and that we have a lot of wisdom about whether parts of the body feel tight or spacious, whether there is energy in the body or whether we feel maybe a little bit under-energized or stuck, or, you know, and to pay attention to that. And typically if there is discomfort, it's often related to constriction. So maybe going to space and seeing if there's somewhere in the mechanism or somewhere else in the body that could open up or relax a little bit. So it's like very generalized advice. And the other piece is body mapping. So learning at least some basic anatomy about the vocal instrument. So knowing, like, for example, that your diaphragm is positioned like this in your body, that your diaphragm is not your abdominal wall, you know, because people will say things like, oh, I was told to sing from my diaphragm. And it's like, okay, what does that mean? And then they point to their abdominal wall and they say, oh, I'm supposed to tighten here. And it's like, okay, well, so there's some refinement that's possible in their body map. And the body map is just the understanding, the internal representation of what is in your body and how it operates. And our external body map, like you were alluding to, is usually pretty refined. Like I know that my elbow can bring my hand to my shoulder, and I know that my elbow cannot bring the back of my hand to my armpit. And I know that from using my arm, and I can see that that's the way that hinge joint operates, right? As far as the map of the larynx, you know, and the different pieces of cartilage that move the vocal folds, the orientation of the vocal folds themselves, which are horizontal, not vertical, like, you know, the fact that we can't actually feel sensation in the vocal folds, things like that, little pieces of anatomical information can go such a long way in you using your body in the way it was designed to be used, right? If we know where our lungs are, it changes the way that we breathe. If we know that our ribs move from the back body, that their mobile attachments are to the spine, not the sternum, that they move from the back, that can change the way that we live in our body, the way we breathe, the way we sing. So I try not to inundate singers with too much anatomical information. And I really try to put little bits here and there over time. But it's incredibly useful. And that anatomical understanding is not just seeing pictures in a book or watching a YouTube video of ribs moving and a diaphragm moving. That's helpful, but it's your interoception, your ability to feel your body moving, that really brings that information to life. So that's where having like a movement practice, myofascial practice, a meditation practice that's about body sensation can help to animate that sort of drier anatomical information that we learn from books and videos and teachers. So you don't have to be an anatomist. You don't have to be a kinesiologist to be a great singer, but knowing, you know, where your diaphragm is, what it does, what it doesn't do, things like that are really helpful, I think. And if you want, just DM me and I'll tell you some stuff that might be helpful for you to know. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's such great advice. If there is one thing, I don't know, I'm looking at my question now and I'm like, why am I asking this question?
Go for it. Let's try.
You know what? Let's see. Yeah. What is one thing musicians could do to be more embodied?
Oh, slow down and give yourself some space to feel what you feel. Whether it's an emotion or a physical sensation, we are so busy. And our culture really urges us to produce, to achieve, to move. So actually, it's a pretty easy question. My answer would be to slow down and to be kind to yourself with what emerges when you allow that space.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
I would like our listeners to know about meditation, that your mind and your body are designed to move. They are designed to want to shift. Your mind is designed to get distracted. So should you try some sort of meditation or contemplative practice and you immediately get distracted, you're doing it right. That's the way the mind works. And the practice of meditation is the realization of like, oh, I've gotten distracted. And wait, I'm meditating. I'm going to come back to presence. That is the practice. Because I think it's very easy to think if we get distracted that we've like failed at meditation, we're bad at it, and so we should not do it. But that really is the practice. So that's very important to me. And I would say similarly with movement or myofascial, if you do these practices and they are confusing at first, or they don't necessarily feel good, but there's something about them that is intriguing to you, or you have a sense that like maybe there's some value in it, keep exploring. You know, it's hard to know sometimes when to step back from something and when to move into it. But I would say that, you know, there are challenges to all of these practices, and that's actually part of their great value, is in being with those challenges and the resilience that you build through them. So I would say be kind to yourself, but also know that this stuff, if it was super easy all the time, everybody would do it. and it's worth it. It's really worth it to find your way into yourself.
How can we find you?
Oh, well, you can find me here on the Instagram at Embodied Singer. And you can go to my website, www.embodiedsinger.com, that has a big online video library. And actually yesterday I launched a monthly membership that I'm doing as a beta test. So I'm doing a beta test with about 15 people, and it's live classes, some of which have singing, some of which do not. Big libraries of pre-recorded video content and resources and all of that stuff. So I'm thinking that the big launch to everybody will probably be in September, but it might be a little earlier than that. But the classes you're welcome to take. So I teach a roll and restore, which is myofascial and pretty gentle movement and breathing practices, on Monday nights. Starting this week, Wednesdays, I will do rise and roll, which is a more dynamic, active practice with myofascial release and movement. It's only a half hour. It's in the mornings. And then on Fridays, embodied singer, where we do myofascial and movement and actually sing, but you could totally have your instrument handy and play. I have some flute players who are in the beta, which is awesome. So it'll be great to get their feedback about how these practices interact with and support instrumental playing. But yeah, so my website, or DM me anytime, ask questions. I love to connect with people and offer anything I can that might be helpful.
Oh, that's so cool. And all this information is also, I'll be putting in the show notes so that you can find it there. So thank you so much, Shauna. I'm so happy that we had this chance to talk, and it's so great always chatting.
I feel like we could get like an Airbnb in Big Sur for a week and just like talk about all the practices and do all the practices. I would love to like do this same live and ask you all of the same questions. I just am so, so grateful and so thrilled that it seems like more and more people are taking this more holistic, embodied, aware, and respectful way of supporting fellow musicians through music education. And I hope it's really just the beginning of everyone starting to adopt these practices too.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to hit subscribe, give us a rating, and follow on Instagram at The Aligned Musician. Thank you so much, and take care.